The views expressed on the Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, WSFM LP Asheville, or Friends of Community Radio.
Come on! Listen! Listen!
You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3, Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS-LP in Columbus, Ohio. Archives of the show can be found a week after broadcast at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can contact us for any reason you want to at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. This week on the show, we're featuring a conversation with Imam Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, a prisoner on Solidarity Hunger Strike at Ohio State Prison in Youngstown who is attempting to press the warden about current conditions at the prison. Among the issues the six prisoners still on hunger strike are protesting are the inability of all new and incoming prisoners at OSP and those currently on the highest level of security, 5B, to attend congregational religious activities, also poor quality of food, as presented by the private prison corporation Aramark, the company that is contracted to serve meals at OSP, a lack of access to outside recreation for prisoners, and more. You may recall Hassan from a prior interview we did with him on the anniversary of the 1993 Lucasville prisoner uprising, which began because of some of the same issues as the current hunger strike, and for which Hassan is facing a death penalty as an organizer of the end of the uprising. Before we hear from Hassan, we get a very clear synthesis of the issues leading to the hunger strike at OSP from Sean Swain's segment. Relatedly, there is a rally in solidarity with the hunger strikers in Columbus, Ohio, on Tuesday, the 14th of April at 3 p.m. at the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corruption, ODRC, headquarters, 770 West Broad Street. The point of the rally is to deliver a list of demands to the officials of the ODRC and pressure them to change the conditions at OSP Youngstown, thus ending the hunger strike. The rally coincides with the 22nd anniversary of the Lucasville Uprising, which started because of the denial of religious rights of Muslim prisoners, including Sadiq Abdullah Hassan. More info at lucasvilleamnesty.org. From that site, we get this text. If you can't make it to Columbus, please be creative and find a way to support the hunger strike on Tuesday. Organize a solidarity fast like students at the University of Toledo did on Friday, with an evening, quote, break the fast, unquote, get together. Or call in lunch. Gather with friends midday and call the prison, central office, and the CIIC. Numbers and scripts are found on lucasvilleamnesty.org. Or have a letter writing party. Write letters to officials, your local newspapers, and or to the hunger striking prisoners. Whatever you do, let the organizers know by emailing Ben at insurgent.ben@gmail.com. And insurgent and Ben are both capitalized. Insurgent.ben@gmail.com so he can share the stories with the hunger strikers and the world. Tuesday will be the 30th day of the hunger strike. If everyone can find a way to express solidarity on that day, it will make a huge difference for the men's morale and resolve, as well as sending a strong message to the prison authorities that the hunger strikers are not alone in their protest. There's also a rally in the works for at or near OSP on Saturday. Details will be posted at lucasvilleamnesty.org as they are confirmed. If you'd like to write Hassan, Hassan can be reached at Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, that's S-I-D-D-I-Q-U-E, A-B-D-U-L-L-A-H, H-A-S-A-N, R-130-559, OSP, 878 Coitsville Hubbard Road, Youngstown, Ohio, 44505. If you'd like to get a hold of ODRC Director Gary Moore, you could call 614-752-1150. Or you could direct your mail to Gary Moore, G-A-R-Y-M-O-H-R, ODRC Director, 770 West Broad Street, Columbus, Ohio, 43222. Or you could drop him an email via drc.publicinfo@odrc.state.oh.us. feel free to express your concerns for the safety of the prisoners hunger striking at OSP or anywhere else in Ohio. More info and suggestions can be found at lucasvilleamnesty.org. What you say, what you say, what you say,
what? We'll come like a wolf! A couple weeks ago, the weather broke and I went out to the yard. When I got outside, I knelt and brushed the grass with my hand. I felt sunlight, gentle breeze on my face. I heard birds chirping. This was my first time outside since 2012. I had to find a place away from everyone else and wipe the tears from my eyes. Grass, wind, and direct sunlight didn't exist at the Ohio State Penitentiary. Prisoners there go years and even decades without direct contact with others, without grass, wind, or direct sunlight. And recent policy changes there make the isolation and deprivation even harsher. Policy changes that violate the hierarch's own law, and the conditions that provoke several prisoners to hunger strike. Prisoners with no other recourse are starving and maybe dying, only asking the prison officials to do what they claim they do. And the irrational prison officials refuse to budge, even if it means letting these desperate captives die. Some context here. OSP is Ohio's supermax. Prisoners there spend 23 hours in perfect isolation, afforded only an hour of recreation in the shower. Prisoners are cuffed from behind and escorted by two guards when taken to recreation cages, to the shower, and back to the cell. These recreation periods provide for the only real social interaction, because prisoners can talk through plexiglass indoors or through caging in the outdoor recreation area, which is a large cement enclosure with a fence for a roof. Because of a recent stabbing of a guard by a prisoner with a long history of stabbing guards, OSP has now canceled use of these outdoor recreational facilities. No. Because of a recent stabbing of a guard by a prisoner with a long history of stabbing guards, OSP has now canceled use of these recreational facilities, essentially turning the hour of recreation into a 24th hour of isolation. This policy change does nothing to make guards safer, but it eliminates the hour of human interaction, a restriction that doesn't conform to the hierarch's own laws and constitution. Consider, we know from all available data that long-term isolation, like at OSP, mangled the minds of captives. After just a year, prisoners demonstrate less social ability, increased aggression, and irrational anger. Reasonably then, these increases in isolation will result in more aggression and more anger. By prison officials' logic, since years and years of mind-breaking isolation created a prisoner who continuously stabs guards, the solution is to increase the isolation that foreseeably leads to increased irrational anger. In other words, the solution to the problem is more of the problem. In addition to the recreation changes, OSP has also eliminated programs and religious services to a large segment of the population there. Beyond the unconstitutionality, these changes are particularly bizarre when we consider that, according to Warden Jay Lowdown's own mission statement, prisoners prepare for lower security and for release through programming. So, without the programming, the new plan is to take the angriest and most maladjusted prisoners, most in need of programming, subject them to conditions designed to make them angrier and more maladjusted, and withhold the programming that prison officials feel could help make them less angry and better adjusted. That leads to fewer guards getting stabbed. A guard suggested in an online exchange that OSP prisoners should prove they deserve program. What do I know? But aren't prisoners supposedly sent to OSP because they need programs? I mean, by the prison system's narrative, don't the prisons claim to serve public safety? And wouldn't that mean the prison officials get paid for employing a strategy to make bad people better, not a deliberate process for making bad people worse? OSP is now doing openly the exact opposite of what their job is. They are deliberately making supposedly violent and aggressive captives more violent and more aggressive, while withholding everything they believe could make the captive less violent and less aggressive. That serves public safety how? It's incredibly revealing that OSP prisoners are starving and dying in a desperate effort to compel prison officials to simply do what they say they do. Prisoners are starving and dying, hoping to persuade intransigent and irrational prison officials to restore programming and privileges that might slow down their transformation into monsters. It's even more revealing to prison officials hell-bent on turning captives into monsters against their will, would rather let those people die than reform their monster factory. Call Ohio Governor J. Rob Kasich at 614-466-3555 and demand that he terminate ODRC Director Gary Moore. And check out links at SeanSwain.org for what you can do to support these hunger strikers. I think we need a national boycott of Ohio's tourism industry until OSP is closed for good. I brushed the grass with my hand the other day for the first time since 2012. I saw the tremors as my hand shook, a symptom of 18 months of isolation at OSP. I found a quiet place to cry. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from the Southern Ohio Correctional Facility at Lucasville. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at his new address at Sean Swain 243-205, P.O. Box 45699, 1724 State Route number 728, Lucasville, Ohio 45699. To read some of Sean's writings and learn more about his case, check out seanswain.org.
Can you please introduce yourself to the audience?
Yes. This is Imam Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, calling from Ohio State Penitentiary, Ohio Supermax state-of-the-art prison that was built as a result of the 1993 prison uprising at the Southern Ohio Correctional Facility in Lucasville, Ohio.
You're being charged as one of the ringleaders within that uprising, right?
Yes, I was charged as one of the ringleaders in the uprising. In fact, I was charged as the ringleader, the one who's supposed to have masterminded the prison uprising that happened exactly, as a matter of fact, the day is the anniversary, so exactly, 22 years ago today.
And can you tell me about the current situation at OSP
Youngstown?
This call
is originating from an Ohio correctional institution and may be recorded or monitored.
Initially, it started out approximately 50-something people that went on hunger strike as a result of some of the new changes that the new warden instituted at this prison. But and as time went on over the week, some people dropped off because it became too unbearable for them to withstand the hardship of being on the hunger strike. But from Monday, from Monday, March the 16th until now, you still have six of us that still are actually on hunger strike. You have myself. You have David Worley. You have Christopher Reynolds, Cindric Tucker, Keith DeWitt, and the last individual will be Joseph Nagel. There are three whites and three blacks that remains continuously on the hunger strike as of this date.
Can you tell listeners about what some of those changes in policy that the wardens imposed are?
Okay. There were several changes, but the two major changes was, one, the wardens stop congregate religious service for a certain group of prisoners, the worst level that one can be on at this institution. And those prisoners are referred to as level 5B prisoners. And the reason for that, you had a prisoner here by the name of Cornelius Harris, and you spell that C-O-R-N-E-L-I-U-S, Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S. According to the prison authorities, Harris had a very aggressive and assaultive history. And I don't think no other prisoners would deny that. Not in some cases, his behavior was justified, but nevertheless, they consider Harris to be incorrigible beyond being able to be reformed. For example, he once slipped his handcuffs and attacked the CO, knocked his two front teeth out. Not long after that, the CO was in front of his cell harassing him, and the officer in the control booth accidentally or intentionally opened his cell door, and he attacked and stabbed another CO by the name of Burns. After that, he stabbed another CO in the stomach, and there was other incidents he was involved with as well. So as a result of these serious events, the state of Ohio transferred Mr. Harris out of state to Maryland, While he was out of state in Maryland, he stabbed two officers, and they immediately transferred him back to the state of Ohio. I said all that to say that the state of Ohio, especially this institution, they knew his assaultive behavior, and they had a program where you have six people in cages, and the side of the cages was secure, but the front part was just like bars. And while Harris was up there, he stuck his hand between the bars and stabbed the CO in his neck, a non-fatal stabbing. In fact, as of this date, the officer is back working, and that incident happened in December, and officer probably came back to work about 30 days later. And when Harris stabbed this officer, his name is Officer Maroney. I think he spelled it M-A-R-U-L-N-Y, Officer Maroney. And one of Harris' friends, a Conrad, punched another CO in the face. As a result, the warden has stopped all congregate program up there in the six cages temporarily until they can remodel and secure the whole entire area up there, the front part that was not secure. Before it became secure, the warden made it known that no prisoner that was on 5B, which is the worst level that one can be on, would be allowed to attend any more congregate religious service. So that was the first issue.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional institution and may be recorded or monitored.
And myself, as well as the other prisoners, we felt that was unjustifiable. How are you going to issue a sweeping or indiscriminate policy, what I could refer to as collective punishment? How are you going to punish everybody else on 5B as a result of Harris' behavior? You knew his behavior. You allow him to go up there. If anything, you ought to hold your own self responsible. So when we went on hunger strike, the prison authorities and people out in society, they was complaining, a lot of people within the religious community, because it's a situation that affects well, no matter what religion you belong to, and it affects approximately 56 people here at some level 5B. Whether you're Christian, Jew, Catholic, Muslims, or otherwise, it doesn't matter. If you're on 5B, you will not be able to attend your religious service. And one of the problems with that is this. When people first get here, they have to stay on level 5B for a minimum of 1 year. So if a person catches a case in an outside judiciary proceeding and he comes to this institution, he has to be on level 5B for 1 year. And when you go to outside court, you're already punished for your behavior. And for the institution to also additionally punish you, it consists of multiple punishment for the same offense. But when we went on hunger strike, the prison authorities, they didn't notify us, but what they was telling the people out in society who was calling and complaining about prisoners being deprived of their First Amendment right, you know, to have access to participate in their religion, they said one of the alternatives would be that a religious clergy would come to their cell, though, and conduct service in that manner. And we disapprove of that, too, because you have people playing their music, playing their television, people kicking on the shower doors, trying to get out of the showers, people hollering and screaming at each other, trying to hold a conversation. It's just entirely too much noise. So then they say, well, you will have the opportunity to have request for a private meeting with the clergy. Why should a prisoner have to even request a private meeting? You should try to facilitate them where they can have a legitimate religious service. But when people go up to the red cage, religious classes last for 1 hour. But behind the cell doors, the clergy will only stay in front of your cell anywhere from 5 minutes or less. So we had a serious problem with that. With the warden, his name is Jay Forshee, like Forshee's a jolly good fella. You pronounce it, you spell it actually, J-A-Y, and his last surname is Forshee, F-O-R-S-H-E-Y. And from what he told me, he's planning on rescinding that policy because it's not going to work. As it stands now, they're not able to get everyone on a weekly basis to go to their class. And with him trying to implement the clergy coming to someone's door and providing them religious service, it's not going to work. But it remains to be seen if he lives through to his word. I'm not doubting his word. I'm only quoting the latest development. He said he's going to reinstate that.
What kind of support can people on the outside offer to y'all who are continuing the hunger strike? You said there were five of you currently that are continuing it?
The sixth person is down still in the hospital, but he's still on it. He just got him under medical observation. So as of now, it's the six of us that's been on hunger strike since the 16th. And before I get to the other complaints that we're having, the warden is saying this. His position is this, because we're willing to negotiate, long as he's willing to negotiate with him in good faith. But as I explained to him, I don't know him, so don't expect for me to use my reputation and good standing with prisoner, because I'm a standard convict and people respect what I'm saying, because this is not my first time being engaged in the prison authority fighting for my rights, what I know to be legally permissible for me to have upon the law and also according to prisoner's right. So I told him, I don't know you and you don't know me. And one time over a decade ago, I was in another institution and two of the lawyers from Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction, they came down to see me and some other prisoners who was on a hunger strike. And my attorney was present. And they told us, look, we hear you loud and clear. We got your message. Y'all can come off. We're going to address these issues. We came off, and nothing was ever resolved as a result of us coming off. So I learned not to trust the prison authorities unless they put it in writing. His concern is this. He's saying that he would do this, that, and the other. He told me this. He told some of the other prisoners the same thing. And he spoke to some of my attorneys yesterday when they was visiting me, the actual same thing. But he don't want to put nothing in writing. And his reason for not wanting to put it in writing, he said if he were to put something in writing and other prisoners become aware of this, then other prisoners would try to use that as a way or means or a mechanism to extract or to extort demands out of the prisoners, meaning that if a problem exists, prisoners would try to go on a hunger strike thinking that they can pressure the institution into giving them what they want because they gave in to our demands. I understand that being a legitimate concern, but the issue should be if our demands are honorable, if they are constitutionally something we should be getting, then your job as the warden is to be a leader, not to be a follower, not to be a reactionary based on what other people are doing. As you as being a warden or a human being, your obligation and responsibility is to do the right thing in spite of how you feel other people may perceive your actions. But again, I accept his concern as being legit, but I also try to explain to him this, that when we had the 1993 prison uprising that I recently spoke about, that we put together a 21-point agreement, the three prison negotiation, and a Jewish attorney out of Cleveland, Ohio, by the name of Nikki Swartz. And we put together the 21-point agreement, things that the prison authority is supposed to honor. And the warden signed off on it, and the governor said he will make sure that these things are honored. But Nikki Swartz's concern was this. Look, I have an outstanding reputation, not here only out in society, but among the convict body. And if you're not going to honor these 21-point agreement, then let me know, because I don't want no part of it. Don't use me as a tool or as an instrument to bring this right to a peaceful resolution, but then you're not going to honor it. And people, prisoners and people in society will look at me in a negative light. He said, because technically, prisoners have guard hostages.
Call is originating from an Ohio correctional institution and may be recorded or monitored.
The governor could say that we signed the 21-point agreement because some of our officer lives was at stake, and we did what we had to do to get our officers out of there, and we signed the agreement, but we never had intent of doing it. And people in society and the court would agree to that, that that's legally permissible to do that. So Nikki Swartz clearly expressed to the governor, yeah, legally you can do that, but if you plan on doing that, then I don't want no part of this. But the governor assured him that he was going to honor the 21-point agreement. And after he signed the 21-point agreement, we got copies of it. No other prisoners was involved in any uprising as a way of trying to distract concessions or demands from the prison authority. In January 2011, myself and two other death row prisoners, Keith Lamar and Jason Robb, we went on a hunger strike here at this institution, and the warden at that time was David Bobby. And we was death row prisoners, but we was not housed with death row prisoners. death row prisoners was housed in a different area, but yet it's still many things that the death row prisoners was being allowed to get, we was not allowed to get. For example, they had access to a computer room where they can participate in their appeal process, study their case, and assist their counselors and help them trying to win their freedom and get off death row. But we didn't have access to that, and our concern was, look, our case and our lives is just as important as the other death row prisoners. So why can't we have access to the computer room? These guys was allowed semi-contact visit. We was not allowed that privilege. They was allowed to get 3 food packages in from an outside vendor. You know, you can get 2 food packet, two food box and 1 clothes box. They was had access to use the phone every day, and we didn't have access to that privilege. So when it was all said and done, in addition to the things that I just mentioned, they gave us also the opportunity to use the phone at least 1 hour per day. We was given additional recreation time and some other things. I can't remember everything that we was given, but as a result, we was given that, and we went on it January the 3rd. By January the 14th, the warden, David Bobby, he signed an agreement in writing, put his signature on it, gave it to us, and we still have copies of that in our possession. No other prisoners tried to use that as an instrument or as a tool to try to extract concessions out of the warden. So, again, I understand the warden's concern. That don't mean I agree with him. I understand his concern. But at the same time, there's no precedence that anyone has ever tried to extract any concessions out of the governor, wardens, his predecessors, as a result of them going on legitimate hunger strike. So what is his real concern? So what can people do? I'm sorry I went through that long history, but trying to give you a clear picture of what's going on. Since that is the warden's concern, and after talking to him, I came back in my cell and said, how can I ease his concern? Well, okay, here's one way that I came up with. The attorneys that I was talking to, they're long-time activists involved in the Vietnam War, the racial things that was going on, the Mississippi Freedom Movement, and the list goes on and on and on. And they're civil attorneys, corporate attorneys. So I'm intending to explain to the warden this. You don't want to put anything in writing because you don't want other prisoners to get a hold to it, and then they can try to extract concessions up out of you. Well, I propose this. You write down what you plan to do specifically, what time, when you plan on implementing it, or when you think it'd be ready to be implemented, and we can do this. You can write it down. You can give it to the Lynns with your signature on it. These are 2 attorneys, husband and wife, Staunton and Alice Lynn. You can give them the agreement that you make, and we can have a non-disclosure agreement, meaning that they are not, the Lynns will be not be allowed to share that with the media. They would not be allowed to put it on the Internet. They would not be allowed to send us a copy in. They will hold it in their possession, so the Lynns and you will be the only one to have a copy of it. But if you don't implement what you said you're going to implement and your signature is on it, then the contract...
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional institution and may be recorded or monitored.
The contract, or better yet, the non-disclosure agreement would be void because you did not live up to your end of the bargain or the agreement, and they can expose it to the community. So we're willing to negotiate with him in good faith. The ball is in his park. I mean, if he wants to end this here, truthfully, he can end it tomorrow. He can end it Tuesday. He can end it any time that he wants. So the thing that people can do is impress upon the ward, okay, we understand his concern, and I haven't – what I just – told you that I intend to speak to him about, I haven't had the opportunity to speak to him because I just talked to my attorneys, the Lynns, yesterday, and the warden came in and he was part of that conversation. And it wasn't until I got back in my cell that I came up with this idea. But over the weekend, tomorrow, I intend to send him a communication and proposing that to him. And if he doesn't agree to that, then it goes to show that what he said, his so-called concern, I think it's safe to say he being disingenuous. He's not sincere because I'm giving him a way out. And I spoke last night with some students at the University of Toledo, Arabs, Muslims, non-Muslim, Christian. I'm not sure if any Jews was there. They was black or white. There was a mixture of students. When they heard about what was going on, they joined us yesterday, and someone would be doing it today too. and a fast or a hunger strike are joining forces of protesting the inhumane and the unfair treatment that we are experiencing. So I explained to them last night that that's how they can assist too, that they should use their Facebook page or any other social media outlet that they possibly can. Perhaps they can talk to their pastors or the community in which they come from. People can talk to their state and local representative to call the warden and let him know the ball is in his park. We're willing to negotiate it with him in good faith. The ball is in his park, and if he wants to seriously end this, he can do it in his own time, expeditiously. It can be done, like I say, Monday. It can be done Tuesday.
We're speaking with Imam Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, a prisoner on Solidarity Hunger Strike at Ohio State Prison in Youngstown, who is attempting to press the warden about current conditions at the prison. You may recall Hassan from a prior interview we did with him on the anniversary of the 1993 Lucasville prisoner uprising, which began because of some of the same issues, and for which Hassan is facing a death penalty as an organizer of the end of the uprising. The uprising occurred basically 22 years ago today.
Point two, there have been a lot of struggles around people's freedom of religion within prisons many times. Prison administrators deciding to withdraw people's freedom to participate in religious ceremonies and such. Can you talk about the constitutionality and Supreme Court cases around protecting prisoners' religious rights?
There was a United States Supreme Court case because the prison authority has always tried to use safety and security as a reason to deny prisoners their constitutional right. And in most cases, the courts have found out that the prison officials would always use that as an excuse to deny prisoners their constitutional right. Let's take, for example, if Muslims or some other religious person wanted to wear a beard because it's a requirement or one of the tenets in their faith, and they wanted to weigh an inch, half of an inch, or 2 inch a beard, the prison authority, the first thing they would scream, it's not permissible. It will create a threat to the safety and security of the institution because someone can conceal contraband in their beard. On the face of it, it seems legitimate. But when you look at the other rules and regulations of the prison, prisoners are allowed to wait.
You have 60 seconds left on this call.
Prisoners are allowed to weigh 4 inches of hair. So when the court see that, the court said, we don't agree that it poses a threat to security of your institution. Because how is it that your prisoners can weigh 4 inches of hair, but they're only asking you for an inch or half an inch of a beard? They can easily conceal something in their hair. They can easily conceal something in their body, in their trousers. Your job is to institute security measures so you can make sure that your prison is secured. What happened if you feel that someone is concealing contraband, every time somebody's walking the hallways, you're going to have them to get nude, naked? You just don't do that. So you have to find other ways to do it. So the prison authority have always used it as a crutch to try to deny people their constitutional rights.
You have 10 seconds left on this call.
So when I call back, I address the court issues on how the court ruled on these matters.
All right. Thanks much. Talk to you soon.
Uh-huh.
This call is now being recorded.
Okay. So the U.S. Supreme Court has decided just because a person comes to prison, he or she does not forfeit their constitutional rights. Before the prison authorities can deny a person their constitutional rights, there are certain factors that must be considered, and they enumerated 4 factors that must be considered before you deny any person who belongs to a valid faith group their constitutional right. For example, 1, is there an alternative to justify the means? Is there an alternative? Another one would be what type of allocation it will cost on the state. And there are other factors. But if a person has an alternative, let's say if the state wanted us to take a TB test and it contains phenol. Phenol is an alcoholic substance. As for Muslims, it's not permissible for us to consume substance, to inject it into our body, to transport alcohol, to sell alcohol, or to be in any part in any involvement in that process. So take, for example, the 1993 uprising, which brought about, which was the straw that broke the camel back that caused the Lucasville uprising to happen, unfortunately. So the prison officials were trying to give us the Mantua tuberculin skin test, and we were telling them or explaining to them that it contains phenol. It is infringing on our religious right. You can give us a sputum specimen, meaning we spit into a cup, they have it examined. We are willing to take an x-ray test. We are willing to take a urine analysis. We are willing to even have you to quarantine us for a couple of weeks until you can come to the determination we have not been affected by TB. Just like people have Ebola, they think people have Ebola. They quarantine them in a matter of weeks, 21 days, they can say, no, this person doesn't have quarantine, and they release the person to mingle with other people in society. We proposed this to the warden, and the warden did not agree. So it was an infringement on our rights for him to force us to do something that was an infringement on our rights, but he just did not see it. He was a hardliner, and he did not agree to it. So the whole point that I'm actually trying to make, and what the court said, is there an alternative? There was an alternative, so the prison authority has no right to try to force us to take a TB shot. So now what a lot of people do, they use that law, the four factors that determine is there legitimate reason for prisoners to be denied or to be granted a religious rights. But what is happening is that a lot of prison officials, what is going on throughout the country, not just here in Ohio, is that prison authorities, they want prisoners to follow the rules and regulations and policies that they are incorporating. But they are not willing to follow the law. They are not willing to uphold people's constitutional rights. And it's unfair because how it is you asking me to follow your rules and regulations, something that you have created, a layperson, but yet and still you don't want to follow the law that has come down from the U.S. Supreme Court. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So in those cases, they're giving people the form without the substance. They're saying that people are allowed to practice their religious, but almost any and every opportunity they can get, the prison crap, they wish to deny prisoners their constitutional right. But what prisoners have to do, they have to file an informal complaint with their system. Then if they're dissatisfied with that answer, they should file a grievance. And if they're dissatisfied with that, then they can send it to central office in their respective state, to the director or the commissioner and the chief inspector. And if they're dissatisfied with that, now they can file a complaint. But if they circumvent those normal procedures there and they try to file a lawsuit individually or a class action suit, what is going to happen? The prison authority is going to file a motion for summary judgment, asking that their case be dismissed because they did not follow the proper procedures. And the court would agree they would dismiss their case on procedural default. So if you have a person has a valid issue and it belongs to a valid faith group that is recognizable, then they should follow those procedures and God willing, they will be granted their religious right. But it's not going to be an easy struggle because of the paperwork, the time frame, etc. In many states, the court does not wish to appoint a counsel. So it's going to be a struggle, but anything worth having is worth fighting for. And I can think of nothing more than a person being able to practice their religion because it helped them to better themselves. It helped them to go through a process of self-reformation, reforming and rechanging the way they think and trying to get their lives together from the mistakes that they actually made in life. And I find it real ironic or very bizarre. Take, for example, in Ohio, we have the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction. And remember, the word rehabilitation, rechanging one habit. But when prisoners are trying to better themselves, they're trying to take this process away from them. Not just here, and other institutions here in the state of Ohio, too, they're being denied certain religious rights, things that are actually valid, especially the religious communities. They should rally behind those prisoners who are trying to practice their religion. But those religions that are all recognized as being valid, belonging to a valid faith group, such as, again, Catholicism, Islam, Protestant, Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, or whatever the case may be, all those and many more are recognized, but there are some people, because they don't belong to a recognized religion, they got to go through the process of first getting it recognized on the books, and after you get it recognized on the books, then you can start practicing it.
Hassan, can you talk about how your personal health has been affected by this hunger strike?
I have to be truthful. I mean, yes. I mean, I'm on a hunger strike. There are some days I may feel the urge to eat. Some days I forget the fact that I'm on a hunger strike because I'm being so engrossed in, you know, making phone calls, calling the public, speaking on college campus, speaking on radio programs, talking to news reporters, the whole nine yards. Sometimes I just get so engrossed in what I'm doing, I forget. Because the other night I was so engrossed in my work, I said, okay, when I get through, I'm going to grab me a Nutty Bar, which is a Little Debbie, and I sit back and watch a little TV. And I came to the realization immediately I didn't have any food in my cell. So for me, it has not really been that bad. I mean, unfortunately, I have to go through it. But remember, I put myself through this here. All the things that prisoners are being denied, and hopefully before we complete this conversation, I'll explain to you some of the other things that prisoners are being denied. But the things that they are being denied, I'm not being deprived of those things. I've been here since the prison opened, and I've been a model prisoner, but they never have any intention of letting me and four other individuals leave this institution. I just knew that the things that they were depriving people of, such as religion, recreation, etc., I knew it was injustice. And as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, quote, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere," unquote. And Prophet Muhammad, may the peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, he said, "None of you truly believe, or none of you have complete faith until you want for your brother what you want for your So I am allowed the privilege to go to religious service. I'm not being deprived of rain recreation and the other things that the prisoner, this new warden, is doing up under his administration. The fact is, I want to see that Muslims, Christians, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, as well as others, be allowed to practice their religion. That injustice did not sit with me. By me knowing a lot of people in the media, having approximately 8 attorneys at my disposal who represent me, who provide me legal advice, etc., and having better communication to the outside world because I get to use the phone on a daily basis, I have the opportunity. If I join them, then my supporters and the people that I've been communicating with, they will listen to me because I have access to them. I figure it could help magnify the cause of what was going on. So I sacrificed my own body for the sake of these other guys who are on the hunger strike too, and everybody who is being deprived of these certain rights and privileges. So none of the things that they're being deprived of, I'm not being deprived of any of them. So I guess you can say by me going on it, it's not the same as other people. Other people went on it because they was forced to go on to try to get their rights back. I went on it because in being a revolutionary, one who believes in change, one who is willing to establish, fight the establishment. I did it on my own free will, and by me doing it on my own free will, I guess I don't feel the same pain, the hunger, and that they're actually going through. Because, you know, some of them was unable to hold their water. They kept vomiting up the fluid that they was taking. It became dehydrated. They had to take them downstairs, put them up on the IV, and once they recuperated, they brought them back upstairs. Some people was coughing up blood. Some people's stomach be bawling. They have to give them Melatonin tablets. A guy just yesterday, he got up too quick. He fell and bust his head. He tried to get up and fell 2 more times. We had to kick on the doors and holler for the officer. They got him in, and they got him downstairs in observation. He may be down there to Monday. None of those things I have experienced. And being a Muslim, we fast every year throughout for 29 or 30 days during the month of Ramadan. In addition to that, I fast every Monday and Thursday and other days throughout the year. So every year I fast at least 180-something days. But again, I can eat before dawn and I can eat after sunset. But still, I know what it's like to be hungry. I know what it's like to deprive myself for the pleasure of God Almighty of food and drink. So the experience for me is different from the experience from other guys. I don't really experience the hardship that they're actually experiencing. But I told them as long as they stay on it, I'll be with them. I mean, I can't fight. I don't believe in fighting someone's fight for them, but I will fight with you and help you get all the attention that you actually need. So myself, I'm doing pretty good, but some of the other guys, they're really experiencing some harshness. Some of them have high blood pressure. Their blood level is going down. In their urine, they have ketones. and then the blood is getting lower and lower, and the doctor telling some of them that perhaps they need to really seriously consider coming off because they can go into cardiac arrest. But some of them just believe, I guess you could say, in the righteousness of their cause. They struggle, and they're willing to do what it takes to get what they're supposed to have coming. And like I said, the warden can end this at any time that he wants. His only fear is he don't want to put nothing in writing. And I think some of the guys think it's an unrealistic fear. I understand his fear, but I don't agree with him because there's no precedent because you write something down. But people are not going to try to extort him or extract from him confessions. Some of the other guys, they're actually struggling, though. So the sooner that your listening audience can contact the warden. And how they can do so, they should go to LucasvilleAmnesty.org. That's Lucasville, LucasvilleVille. That's Lucasville. There's no dot in between. Amnesty, AMNESTY.org. Again, LucasvilleAmnesty.org. It has all the instructions on what people can do. We were speaking merely about the religious problem here. And I want to emphasize this. Even if the warden honored what he verbally said to me in the lens yesterday about reinstating for 5Bs to be allowed to attend congregate rec service in the rec cages where the officer was stabbed back in December. The whole area is secure now. You can't get to any officer, so there was no reason for him to take those guys' recreation in the first place. But even when they restored that, there are still other religious problems. There's other religious problems. For example, because of the state cut back on the amount of time that religious clergies can come in, they have a contract of only about 3 hours per week, whereas one full-time chaplain here, he gets to call his group or his community out on a weekly basis because he works here 8 hours a day. He gets paid for 8 hours a day, and he can work longer because he's an employee here. But the other people that, for Muslim, Jews, Buddhists, etc., they only get a contract for 3 hours per week. And if a person has 8 classes to teach, remember there's only 6 cages, so only 6 people can go up there at a time. So 18 people, that completes the 3 hours contract because each group lasts for an hour. So that means you have to rotate. Next week it'll be 3 different groups and then 2 groups. So the problem is you're still going to have problems. People are not given the opportunity to have weekly religious service. So not only is it a deprivation of people's First Amendment right, it's also a deprivation of their 14th Amendment right, equal protection up under the law. Why is it that the full-time chaplain, he can call his guys out on a weekly basis, and he's paid and compensated for that, but the other religious community, they're only given 3 hours, and if there are a large amount of people that are trying to practice that religion, then it could take 3-4 weeks before they have another class. So, again, I urge the people in the religious community to contact the warden and complain once they go to LucasvilleAmnesty.org and see the things that they actually can do. Because what we're trying to do, we're trying to get a representative from Director Gary Moore. He's the person in charge of all the prisons in the state of Ohio. And if he's not willing to send a representative here, then one of the alternatives would be, there's a watchdog group that has state representatives on it. It's called the Correctional Institution Inspection Committee, and they have a staff that can come here and investigate the legitimacy of our complaints. If they're not willing to do that when it comes to the religious issue, right now what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to ask people in the society, could they put together an independent review board or committee which consists of religious people from various different communities. So Muslims, Christians, Jews.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional institution and may be recorded or monitored.
And other religious communities, they can bring a member or two from their committee, sit down, be allowed into the prison, and examine how the religious programs are being run here. And I'm sure they will come to the logical conclusion that it's unfair, it's unconstitutional, it's not equal. So these are some of the things that we're trying to do. But going back to the first question you asked me when we got on the phone is what was the issue here? So I only spoke about religious, but let's briefly move on. You have the problem with recreation. people used to come out on the range and recreate. There's a handball court. There's a pull-up and dip bar, and people can run around the range. The range is facing the cell, so exactly where your cell is at. You got, like, some cells on one side and other cells on the opposite side, and people can look at one another. And between these cells on the two different sides, there's a big old open space for range and recreation. Then when the new warden came in here, he just recently instituted there will be no more range rec for 400 people. Only approximately about 20 people allow range rec. Again, I'm not affected by this decision. I'm one of the prisoners who are allowed to be on range rec. So, when he questioned about his reason, he said the reason that there was excessively too much passing going on, and people who belong to gangs was communicating with other gang members. And I explained to him on several occasions and emphasized it once again yesterday. Look, in no prisons in the United States can you stop passing. Because even when prisoners go outside, they got rec cages, and five prisoners can be in the cages together. When they go outside rec, they can pass to one another. When people go to the program booth, not the 5B, because they're restricted at this time, but the 5As and other people, when they go to the religious program booth, they can pass things, and people make lines and fish, throw lines across the range, and one guy scoop it in, and they pass stuff like that. I said, you cannot stop passing. If that's your only reason for wanting to stop passing, you cannot stop passing. But again, why are you punishing everybody for the behavior of a few? Those who are caught passing, or those who are caught breaking the rules and regulations, then what you ought to do, you ought to punish those guys. You can put them on commissary restriction. You can put them on farm restriction. You can put them on recreation restriction. But why are you instituting collective punishment? It does not make any sense. Today, if one of your officers were to bring in drugs, or several of your officers were to bring in drugs, if several of your officers were to bring in cell phones, if some of your officers, senior officers, would be caught up into relationships with other prisoners, and even if it were to get out of hand, under no circumstances did you deny all officers from coming in here. You don't punish all officers. No, you only punish the officer who are responsible for that behavior. So why you have one set of rules for your staff, but another set of rules for your prisoners? You seem to be anti-prisoners. You know, this is exactly how I explained it to him. And myself, him, and another individual is scheduled to have a conversation to see, can we iron out this particular impasse, or see can we resolve it and move on to something else. And if so, then good. But if it doesn't happen, we will continue to be on the hunger strike. Another problem is, I'm sure you and perhaps some of your listening audience, they've heard of this private food company called Aramark, A-R-A-M-A-R-K, Aramark. It's a private food company that has a contract throughout many states.
With a lot of prison systems around the country, actually, and there's been a few strikes in Illinois and Indiana, I believe, in the last few years because of the quality lack of quality of the food that they provide.
True. In the first 6 months that this contract had, private company had a contract with Ohio, just up the street in one of the prisons, on the same street I'm on, right up the street, the prisoners were finding maggots in their food. But one of the ways that this company exists, it cut back, it saves the prison authorities money. Like last year, it saved the state of Ohio $24 or $26 million. So Ohio is more...
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional institution and may be recorded or monitored.
So Ohio seem to be more concerned about cutting back on money than they are concerned about our actual health. Well, take, for example, they provide 2 saccharine sugar, pink sugar, saccharine on a daily basis. Saccharine sugar is for people that are diabetics. Saccharine has also been proven to be cancerous. So we're not diabetics. Why are you giving us saccharine sugar? That's posing a threat to our security for anyone who consumes that. Another thing, the statewide menu said prisoners should be given pancakes with cert, but the company, it discontinues serving pancakes because it costs them too much. So they make their own hard biscuits, and they serve biscuits and cert to prisoners. The menu require for bean burgers, and the bean burgers has always been, for the last 2 decades, consists of soy. It's a soy product. So we get soy bean burgers. But what Aramat does, it discontinues serving soy bean burgers, and now just put together some black beans or beans, mush it up together, and into this thing. And the warden said he's seen it, and there's no way in the world he would eat that. And he said he's not going to tolerate it in this institution. That's what he said yesterday. But again, I want him to put it in writing. I never have to see it, but if he's going to put it in writing and someone be allowed to, the lens be allowed to hold those non-discovery agreement, then that will be fine. So there's, and I can go on and on about the food, but just trying, before this, we conclude this call, trying to give you and your listening audience a better understanding. The prison authority moves flow mats out of the shower area. You know, we have the shower area, the shower stall are completely stainless steel. And as a result, they removed it because they said it was a hazard. Bugs and flies, was whatever the case was, they removed it from the shower area. And as a result, people were falling and busting their head open and getting stitches in their head. In fact, before they installed them in the shower, 17 years ago, prisoners was falling and hurting themselves, so that's why they put it in there. But they removed them and said it was getting in some vocal strips. But the vocal strips are not going to work in the shower, according to them. I don't know if they even tried to install them or they really even order any of them. But what the warden said, he was going to put the shower mats back into the shower because he sees it's creating a serious problem. And the last thing, major issue that is going on here is the medical situation. Because of the financial crunch that the state of Ohio was once in, when the current governor, John Kasich, came into office, the state of Ohio was $8 billion in the red. But he, fortunately, by selling some of the prisons in Ohio, cutting back on prisons' privileges and finances and doing things out of society, he has actually put the country, the state of Ohio in the black. And as a result, they cut back on prisoner medicines, the things they actually need. And so prisoners actually have a medical problem as well. Those seem to be the most five important issues that are actually going on that prompted the the hunger strike.
Well, thank you so much, Austin, for clarifying so many of the issues and expressing them in a way that the listening audience will be able to understand and act on. Tuesday the 14th is scheduled Day of Solidarity in Columbus. And I can give more information after I get off the phone. I can read it up off the website, the Lucasville Amnesty site. And then there's plans and call-outs for activities outside of Columbus, Ohio. Keep safe. I hope your health is good, and I hope that the warden changes his mind soon.
Yes, we hope, and that's the most important thing that you and your listening audience can do, is to contact the warden with regards to that. Thank you for having me on your program.
Always a pleasure.
You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3, Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio. Archives of the show can be found a week after broadcast at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can contact us for any reason you want to at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net.
Depends on you. The hours seem long, the world goes wrong when we're apart. My skies are gray, what can I say to soothe my heart? It is the end, I can't pretend that I'm not blue. Oh, can't you see life's misery away from you?